We received an outline. If you'd like to follow along this evening, there's just a couple left on the stand in the back. If you need one, we're going to continue our study of Ecclesiastes. We're in chapter 7, the first 10 verses. Now let's read it together first. First, try to outline these ten verses. I thought, well, I'll just take the word better, and it's found eight times in the text. I'll just have 8 points. But I found out a couple, going reading this over and over again, a couple betters fit together. So I included them under one section. So I divided the chapter into 5 major headings. Begins in verse 1, a good name is better than precious ointment. The day of death than the day of one's birth. Better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For that is the end of all men. And the living will take it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter. For by a sad countenance the heart is made better. The heart of the wise is in the house of the mourning. Oh, but the heart of fools is in the house of mirth. It's better to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. For like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of a fool. Then I finished the from verses 7 to 10. I included it all in one section. After trying to read it over and over again, it just seemed like it made sense to me that way. But verse 7 was a struggle. It says, surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason. And a bribe debases the heart. Then the end of a thing is better than its beginning. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. All right. So I just kind of put in your notes by way of introduction. Christians believe in things that the world finds foolish. Jesus said in Matthew 10:39, he who finds his life will lose it. Really. He said, he who loses his life for my sake will find it. Makes sense. Not to the world. In Luke 6:38, give and it'll be given unto you. The world said, no. Just give me. In Acts 20, verse 35, Paul said, remember the words of the Lord Jesus, and that he said, it's more blessed to give than to receive. I like receiving. In Matthew 23:11, he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. Whosoever exalts himself shall be humbled. He who humbles himself shall be exalted. Some things will not make sense, especially to the worldly mind. Well, Solomon does that in these first 10 verses. He outlines a paradox. Apparently, they seem frustrating on the surface, but they become beautiful in the spirit. Paradox, by definition, a statement contrary to received opinion. Conflicting with expectation, a paradox. A contradictory statement that may nonetheless be true. It's a paradox. So in this section, Solomon gives us several paradoxes. And 8 times he uses the word better. And he's not teaching about things that are right and wrong in life as much as he's teaching about things that are better than other things. Things that are better. Almost like the lesson this morning. So here's the first one, number 1. A good name is better than precious ointment. Another translation said, a good name before good ointment. Proverbs 22, verse 1, a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. There's a choice. He's saying the honor of virtue, a life of virtue, is more valuable and desirable than all the worldly treasure and pleasure. A life of virtue. You think of precious ointment. That was a valuable commodity in that day. Precious ointment. It was used to anoint kings. Precious ointment was kept as a treasure in the households. Remember when Jesus had precious ointment poured over him? In Matthew 26, verse 6, an alabaster flask of very costly, fragrant oil. That's the quote. And it was being poured on the head of Jesus at Simon's house. The disciples saw it. And they said, why this waste? For this fragrant oil might have been sold for much and given to the poor. Yeah, fragrant oil. But a good name is more precious. More precious. My grandsons were, well, they're a lot younger now like 9, 11 or so. But when they were extra little, I'd come and I'd say, you know, good. Solomon said a good name is more precious than riches. And I'd hold out a couple quarters, and I'd say, now, which would you rather have? These two quarters or a good name? I lost two quarters. And I would keep doing that over the course of time, you know, as they got a little bit older. Which would you hold out the quarters? Which would you rather have? And so I kept thinking, you know, one day they're going to choose the good name. But right now, they've taken me for a lot of quarters. A lot of treasure. But I also know that as soon as they say, they know, as soon as they say a good name, the quarters stop. I think that one of them nudges the other. Always take the quarters. Take the quarters. We'll get more later. I'd asked Dennis. He came by the office. Said, Dennis, I want you to share something with the congregation. We're talking about a good name being better than precious ointment. And it leads to the next statement where the day of death is better than one day of one's birth. So I asked Dennis to share a story he told years and years ago. Dennis?
If I can stand up
right there where you are.
If I can remember it. You're talking about the two brothers that own the bank in town.
You have to stand up just so everybody can
hear you. Two brothers own the bank in town. They're the richest people in town, and they were dishonest and arrogant and hateful, and they closed the... whenever a widow was late for the payment, they foreclosed and took the land and everything else. One of the brothers died, and the other brother was having a hard time because of the bad reputation that they had in the town. He was having a hard time finding a minister to do the funeral. Finally, he came upon this church that needed a new roof, so he approached the preacher and he said, if you will do the funeral for my brother, and if you will say that he was a real saint, we'll repair the roof on your church, you know, for no charge. So the preacher took the opportunity to get his roof repaired, but he wondered to himself, how in all good conscience can I say that this guy was a saint? So the whole town was there wondering how is the preacher going to handle this situation? So he got up and said, well, we're here to remember John here. Now, we know his reputation was terrible in the town, and he was a very dishonest man. But compared to his brother, he was a saint.
That's great.
Now, what does that have to do with the lesson?
I don't know. I just wanted to hear the story already. Some things just need to be heard over and over again. Number two, in verse 1 still, and better the day of death than the day of one's birth. Well, there's two days in life when a person's name is prominent. You know, his birthday and his death day. But what happens between those two days determines whether your name is precious or not. Remember last week's lesson on the that poem, The Dash. So if you die with a good name, your name can never be tarnished again. However, when you are born, you have an entire life ahead with possibility of tarnishing, which we don't know. So looking back on a good name, meaning a good life, is better than looking forward to an unknown name or an unproved life. That's what Solomon is saying. It's a paradox. So in a sense, the sorrow of the death day is better than the laughter of the birthday. I take Solomon's word for that. Because I really enjoyed my grandchildren's birthday. The third section in verses 2 through 4. Verse 2, better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting. Verse 3, sorrow is better than laughter. So now, in this section, Solomon is giving us the benefits of a funeral. At least that's what I'm thinking of this. We go to the funeral, and when you attend there, the wise men will learn from that life is brief. He'll be taught. He says in verse 2, for that is the end of all men. The death day, that's right. Where this one is gone, we will go. Brevity of life. The living know that they shall die in chapter 9, verse 5. In 1 Kings 2, verse 1, the days of David drew near that he charged Solomon his son, saying, I go the way of all the earth. Be strong, therefore, prove yourself. Keep the charge of the Lord your God, his ways, keep his statutes, his commandments, his judgments, his testimonies. Right. We go the way of all the earth. My father-in-law changed that word to flesh. We go the way of, I'm going the way of all flesh. Me too. I have more days to say. I have more days behind me than I have. The second benefit of a funeral is in verse 2 still. The living will take it to heart. So now we have a quick section on the heart of the matter. In verse 3, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. So the spiritual person attending the funeral is going to take it to heart. So more than just head knowledge, the lesson is learned and the lesson is applied. In verse 4, back to the heart. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning. So I just put in your notes, the house of mourning is the wise man's school. We learn. Sadness is often a happy means of seriousness. It humbles us. In 1 Peter 1, verse 13, Peter said, therefore, gird up the loins of your mind. Be sober. Right? There's things in life that need to get our attention. And Solomon, in this text or these few verses, is reference to the funeral, the end of all men. Solomon says to avoid that, and he gives the illustration in verse 4, but the heart of the fools is in the house of laughter. So the foolish man believes that sadness is a hamper or a discredit to his merriment. Oh, the house of fools, or the heart of fools. Foolish man sees no value in sorrow and sadness. Like the bumper sticker says, someone has more than somebody else. So this man has the boat and the RV, the motorcycle, the ATV, the vacation home, and the list goes on. Yeah. So in their understanding of life, the most toys wins. And Solomon says he wouldn't agree with that. Point number 4. It's better, it's in verse 5, better for a man to hear the rebuke of the wise than for a man to hear the song of fools. Well, here's Solomon's Proverbs 6, verse 23. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. Doesn't mean it's just part of life. He's saying that is a good life if you receive the reproof of instruction. In chapter 10, verse 17, he who keeps instruction is in the way of life, the good life. But he who refuses instruction goes astray. Chapter 12, verse 1 of Proverbs. Whoever loves instruction loves knowledge. But he who hates correction is stupid. It's in the Bible you have in your pews, the New King James Version. It's stupid. Chapter 17, verse 10. Rebuke is more effective for a wise man than 100 blows on a fool. Wow. You cannot beat sense in a foolish person. 100 blows. Nope, you didn't learn. Rebuke is more effective for a wise man. In chapter 27, verse 6, faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful. So Solomon says, it's better for a man to hear the rebuke of the wise. Yeah. And he likens the foolish man in verse 6, for like the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of the fool. And that's vanity. So the illustration is the burning of thorns make a quick blaze and a loud noise, but it dies out quickly. The laughter of the foolish one. Yes, oh, that was grand and glorious and great for the moment. But the laughter of the fool is noisy, it's flashy, but it won't last, it's temporary. That's the message in that verse. The song of fools, that's flattery. In Psalm 12, verse 2, they speak idly, every one with his neighbor. And with flattering lips and a double heart, they speak. May the Lord cut off all flattering lips and the tongue that speaks proud things. Oh. Wow. The laughter of the fool, like thorns, crackling thorns under a pot. Number 5, versus the rest of the text, verses 7 through 10. Verse 7, surely oppression destroys a wise man's reason. And a bribe debases the heart. So King James uses the phrase, surely oppression makes a wise man mad or loses the reason. And a gift or a bribe destroys the heart. Well, one verse in Psalm 125, verse 3, gives an illustration of this. It says, for the scepter of the wicked shall not rest on the land allotted to the righteous. I don't understand that. The scepter of the wicked shall not rest on the land allotted to the righteous. So there's always going to be an oppression by the wicked. And it will not rest. And the rest of the verse says, lest the righteous reach out their hands to iniquity. So that continual oppression. It's possible for a wise man, or a strong man, through constant oppression or through constant discouragement, to become weak or foolish. So there's the temptation when you have that constant oppression, that constant pressure or troublesome times, to take a bribe or a gift, and the gain that you seem to reap from it will destroy your heart at the last or in the end. We're warned about that. I put Galatians 6, verse 1. Brethren, a man be overtaken in any trespass. You are spiritual, restore such one in a spirit of meekness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. So when the troublesome time comes or the oppression, though we are wise and strong, there is that possibility. Not in 100% of the situation. But it's possible that the strong man may become weak with that constant pressure. So now Solomon gives the rationale to avoid that. How can I maintain my weakness when I'm oppressed? Or my strength. How can I keep my strength when I'm oppressed or being constantly bombarded? What am I going to do? What's the solution, the remedy? I don't want to destroy my reason. I don't want to become mad. I don't want to have stinking thinking. So here it is. Number 1's in verse 8. The end of a thing is better than its beginning. In other words, have an end view. I'm going to last through this. Aren't we glad when certain things are over? The end view, like a sermon. Glad when that's over. Yep. or a training or an education. I finished college. What was I wrong? We're glad when the week is over, depending on when your weekend is. Or just finishing a difficult task. Oh, I'm glad that's over. Or any adversity we're in, sickness or illness. Oh, I'm glad we got through that. So Solomon says, you know, when those troublesome times come, or that hardship, or that difficult task, whatever it is, the end is better than its beginning. Even though you have great excitement at the start, can't wait. I'll be glad when it's over. So we want to be focused on where we're heading before we begin the journey. Better is the end of a thing than the beginning. So when those hardships come, I'll get through this. I'll last. Oppression? Yeah, we have it. Can't get out of it. About the end view. Number two is in verse 8. The patient. Oh, we have to have patience now, don't we, when we're oppressed? Difficulties. The patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. So being constantly oppressed or facing adversity or discouragement, patience. And we're admonished over and over again about patience. Endurance. Lasting. Steadfastness. Patience. Get to get through. And we recognize the illustration that Paul uses several times, that it's like running a race and it's an exercise in patience. Romans 5, verse 3 says, not only that, we glory in tribulation, knowing that tribulation produces perseverance or patience, and patience, perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. So there's a sequence, there's a progression when we're troubled, providing we hang in there or stay. Don't give up too soon. Romans 8, verse 25 says, we hope for what we do not see. That's right, I can't see the end of a thing yet. I'm in the middle of it. But we eagerly wait for it with patience. And we hope for what we don't see. That's right. Now the third remedy that Solomon gives is in verse 9. Do not hasten in your spirit to be angry. Well, hate my oppression. Hate the situation I'm in. I'm so angry at what's happening. These troublesome times. We groan. Don't hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosom of fools. So don't be hasty in your expectations about oppression or adversity or troublesome times. Don't be hasty. Don't be quick with resentment. Don't harbor Ephesians 4, verse 27, when you're angry, don't give place to the devil. Oh, see the warning. In Proverbs 15, verse 18, a wrathful man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger allays contention. Yeah. Slow to anger. And it calms a storm. Slow. But anger rests in the bosom of fools. Anger is harbored in the foolish man. Anger, if it resides in the foolish man, it fills that person's bosom. And Solomon says, oh, that's the foolish man. The last one in verse 10. Don't say, why were the former days better than these? For you do not inquire wisely concerning this. Ah, the good old days. You've heard that phrase, haven't we? But you know, the days we live in now will one day be the good old days to our children and grandchildren. They're going to look back and say, weren't those days good? Yeah. Sometimes, or somehow, these days will look better in the years ahead. I don't know how. Not a pandemic year. I can't imagine those days looking good 30 years from now. So Solomon said they weren't better. The old days were not good. He says, you do not inquire wisely. Now, why did he add that to the phrase? Because some of us might still think, oh, I remember the life I had back then and the family and the community and all those good things. I remember that time in my life. But Solomon says, if you inquire, you don't inquire wisely, saying, you know, it's a foolish reflection on God thus far. You've taken God out of the picture that God has not given us good days right now. to say, oh, those were good days and these are not. Wait a minute, God still works. If you say those were the good old days and not the present, then it takes away the sight of God's work in our lives today. One song, but I'll just read the words. When upon life's billows you are tempest-tossed, when you are discouraged, thinking all is lost. Oh, I've been there. Count your many blessings. Name them one by one. And I like this last next phrase. And it will surprise you what the Lord has done. That's right. Live for today. Second stanza. Are you ever burdened with a load of care? Does the cross seem heavy you're called to bear? Count your many blessings. Every doubt will fly. And you'll be singing as the days go by. So, amid the conflict, do not be discouraged. God is over all. Count your many blessings. Name them one by one. Help and comfort give you. Count your many blessings. Angels will attend. Help and comfort give you to your journey's end. Your journey's end. And Solomon just said that. So the course is count your blessings. Name them one by one. Count your blessings. See what God has done. Count your blessings. Name them one by one. Count your many blessings and see what God has done. That's Ecclesiastes chapter 7, verses 1 through 10. Right in that song. The world doesn't see it that way. Remember, that's that first point. We believe in things that the world would find foolish. Not understanding. We have our faith. I put the last comment. I didn't have room. I ran out of space, so I didn't have opportunity to write more in your notes at the very, very bottom. But if you're not sure how God uses these paradoxical situations, look again at Romans 8, verse 28. We know that all things work together for good to those that love the Lord and are called according to his purpose. And that's how he does it. God takes things that look like they are the opposite of good and causes them to work together for good and his glory. Some things don't have that appearance, but God takes those things and uses them for our benefit. Hang in there. That's the lesson. All right. I'm reading the rest of chapter 7 and it seemed like every phrase is a little lesson, so I'm not sure how I will summarize that or treat it, but we'll see, Lord willing. All right, again, at the close of a lesson, we sing a song of encouragement, an invitation, a song of exhortation. If you're not a member of the New Testament church, you need help from above. You need to live your life on God's side. Stand on his side and let folks know to whom you belong. You need to become a Christian. You're not a Christian already, but to be baptized for remission of sins and rise to walk in newness of life. Gain the health, the resources, prayer, friendship, fellowship, God's Spirit, a heavenly host. There's just abundant blessings that will assist us to live our life. So let's stand together. We'll sing the song that does the select for us. Meet publicly.